Chapter 91. Contrasts. Turn we our eyes upon two homes, not lying side by side, but wide apart, though both within easy range and reach of the great city of London. The first is situated in the green and wooded country near Norwood. It is not a mansion, it is of no pretensions as to size, but it is beautifully arranged and tastefully kept. The lawn, the soft smooth slope, the flower garden, the clumps of trees, where graceful forms of ash and willow are not wanting, the conservatory, the rustic veranda with sweet-smelling creeping plants entwined about the pillars, the simple exterior of the house, the well-ordered offices, though all upon the diminutive scale proper to a mere cottage, bespeak an amount of elegant comfort within, that might serve for a palace. This indication is not without warrant, for, within, it is a house of refinement and luxury. Rich colors, excellently blended, meet the eye at every turn. In the furniture its proportions admirably devised to suit the shapes and sizes of the small rooms, on the walls, upon the floors, tinging and subduing the light that comes in through the odd glass doors and windows here and there. There are a few choice prints and pictures too. In quaint nooks and recesses there is no want of books, and there are games of skill and chance set forth on tables, fantastic chessmen, dice, backgammon, cards, and billiards. And yet amidst this opulence of comfort, there is something in the general air that is not well. Is it that the carpets and the cushions are too soft and noiseless, so that those who move or repose among them seem to act by stealth? Is it that the prints and pictures do not commemorate great thoughts or deeds, or render nature in the poetry of landscape, hall, or hut, but are of one voluptuous cast mere shows of form and color and no more? Is it that the books have all their gold outside, and that the titles of the greater part qualify them to be companions of the prints and pictures? Is it that the completeness and the beauty of the place are here and there belied by an affectation of humility, in some unimportant and inexpensive regard, which is as false as the face of the too truly painted portrait hanging yonder, or its original at breakfast in his easy chair below it? Or is it that, with the daily breath of that original and master of all here, there issues forth some subtle portion of himself, which gives a vague expression of himself to everything about him? It is Mr. Carker, the manager, who sits in the easy chair. A gaudy parrot in a burnished cage upon the table tears at the wires with her beak, and goes walking, upside down, in its dome top, shaking her house and screeching. But Mr. Carker is indifferent to the bird, and looks with a musing smile at a picture on the opposite wall. A most extraordinary accidental likeness, certainly, apostrophe says he. Perhaps it is a Juno, perhaps a Piafer's wife, perhaps some scornful nymph according as the picture dealers found the market when they christened it. It is the figure of a woman, supremely handsome, who, turning away, but with her face addressed to the spectator, flashes her proud glance upon him. It is like Edith. With a passing gesture of his hand at the picture, what? A menace? No, yet something like it. A wave as of triumph? No, yet more like that. An insolent salute wafted from his lips? No, yet like that too. He resumes his breakfast, and calls to the chafing and imprisoned bird, who, coming down into a pendant gilded hoop within the cage, like a great wedding ring, swings in it, for his delight. The second home is on the other side of London, near to where the busy Great North Road of bygone days is silent and almost deserted, except by wayfarers who toil along on foot. It is a poor small house, barely and sparely furnished, but very clean, and there is even an attempt to decorate it, shown in the homely flowers trained about the porch and in the narrow garden. The neighborhood in which it stands has as little of the country to recommend it as it has of the town. It is neither of the town nor country. The former, like the giant in his traveling boots, has made a stride and passed it, and has set his brick and mortar heel a long way in advance. But the intermediate space between the giant's feet, as yet, is only blighted country, and not town, and here, among a few tall chimneys belching smoke all day and night, and among the brick fields and the lanes where turf is cut, and where the fences tumble down, and where the moldy nettles grow, and where a scrap or two of hedge may yet be seen, and where the birdcatcher still comes occasionally, though he swears every time, to come no more, this second home is to be found. Apostrophe, she who inhabits it, is she who left the first in her devotion to an outcast brother. She withdrew from that home its redeeming spirit, and from its master's breast his solitary angel. But though his liking for her is gone, after this ungrateful slight as he considers it, and though he abandons her altogether in return, an old idea of her is not quite forgotten even by him. Letter flower garden, in which he never sets his foot, but which is yet maintained, among all his costly alterations, as if she had quitted it but yesterday, bear witness. Harriet Carker has changed since then, and on her beauty there has fallen a heavier shade than time of his unassisted self can cast, all potent as he is the shadow of anxiety and sorrow, and the daily struggle of a poor existence. But it is beauty still, and still a gentle, quiet, and retiring beauty, that must be sought out, for it cannot vaunt itself. If it could, it would be what it is, no more. Yes. This slight, small, patient figure, neatly dressed in homely stuffs, and indicating nothing but the dull, household virtues, that have so little in common with the received idea of heroism and greatness, unless, indeed, any ray of them should shine through the lives of the great ones of the earth, when it becomes a constellation, and distract in heaven straightway this slight, small, patient figure, leaning on the man still young, but worn and gray, is she, his sister, who, of all the world, went over to him in his shame, and put her hand in his, and with a sweet composure and determination, led him hopefully upon his barren way. It is early, John, apostrophe she said. Why do you go so early? Apostrophe, not many minutes earlier than usual, Harriet. If I have the time to spare, I should like, I think it's a fancy, to walk once by the house, where I took leave of him. Apostrophe, I wish I had ever seen or known him, John. Apostrophe, it is better as it is, my dear, remembering his fate. Apostrophe, but I could not regret it more, though I had known him. Is not your sorrow mine? And if I had, perhaps you would feel, that I was a better companion to you in speaking about him, than I may seem now. My dearest sister, is there anything within the range of rejoicing or regret, in which I am not sure of your companionship? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I hope you think not, John, for surely there is nothing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how could you be better to me, or nearer to me than you are in this, or anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said her brother. I feel that you did know him, Harriet, and that you shared my feelings towards him. Apostrophe, she drew the hand which had been resting on his shoulder, round his neck, and answered, with some hesitation. No, not quite. Apostrophe, true, true. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. You think I might have done him no harm, if I had allowed myself to know him better? Apostrophe, apostrophe, think. I know it. Apostrophe, designedly, heaven knows I would not, apostrophe, he replied, shaking his head mournfully. But his reputation was too precious, to be perilled by such association. Whether you share that knowledge, or do not, my dear apostrophe, I do not, apostrophe, she said quietly. It is still the truth, Harriet, and my mind is lighter, when I think of him for, that which made it, so much heavier then. Apostrophe, he checked himself in his tone of melancholy, and smiled upon her as he said goodbye. Apostrophe, apostrophe, goodbye, dear John. In the evening, at the old time and place, I shall meet you as usual on your way home. Goodbye. Apostrophe, the cordial face she lifted up to his to kiss him, was his home, his life, his universe, and yet it was a portion of his punishment and grief. For in the cloud he saw upon it, though serene and calm as any radiant cloud at sunset, and in the constancy and devotion of her life, and in the sacrifice she had made of ease, enjoyment, and hope, he saw the bitter fruits of his old crime, forever ripe and fresh. She stood at the door looking after him, with her hands loosely clasped in each other, as he made his way over the frozy and uneven patch of ground which lay before their house, which had once, and not long ago, been a pleasant meadow, and was now a very waste, with a disorderly crop of beginnings of mean houses, rising out of the rubbish, as if they had been unskillfully sown there. Whenever he looked back, as once or twice he did, her cordial face shone like a light upon his heart. But when he plodded on his way, and saw her not, the tears were in her eyes as she stood watching him. Her pensive form was not long idle at the door. There was daily duty to discharge, and daily work to do for such commonplace spirits that are not heroic, often work hard with their hands, and Harriet was soon busy with her household tasks. These discharged, and the poor housemaid quite neat and orderly, she counted her little stock of money, with an anxious face, and went out thoughtfully, to buy some necessaries for their table, planning, and conniving, as she went, how to save. So sordid are the lives of such low natures, who are not only not heroic to their valets and waiting women, but have neither valets nor waiting women, to be heroic to withal. While she was absent, and there was no one in the house, there approached it by a different way from that the brother had taken, a gentleman, a very little past his prime of life perhaps, but of a healthy florid hue, an upright presence, and a bright clear aspect, that was gracious and good-humored. His eyebrows were still black, and so was much of his hair. The sprinkling of gray observable among the latter graced the former very much, and showed his broad frank brow and honest eyes to great advantage. After knocking once at the door, and obtaining no response, this gentleman sat down on a bench in the little porch to wait. A certain skillful action of his fingers as he hummed some bars, and beat time on the seat beside him, seemed to denote the musician. And the extraordinary satisfaction he derived from humming something very slow and long, which had no recognizable tune, seemed to denote that he was a scientific one. The gentleman was still twirling a theme, which seemed to go round and round and round, and in and in and in, and to involve itself like a corkscrew twirled upon a table, without getting any nearer to anything, when Harriet appeared returning. He rose up as she advanced, and stood with his head uncovered. "You are come again, sir?" she said, faltering. "I take that liberty," he answered. "May I ask for 5 minutes of your leisure?" After a moment's hesitation, she opened the door, and gave him admission to the little parlor. The gentleman sat down there, drew his chair to the table over against her, and said, in a voice that perfectly corresponded to his appearance, and with a simplicity that was very engaging, "Miss Harriet, you cannot be proud. You signified to me, when I called t'other morning, that you were. Pardon me if I say that I looked into your face while you spoke, and that it contradicted you. I look into it again," he added, laying his hand gently on her arm, "for an instant, and it contradicts you more and more." She was somewhat confused and agitated, and could make no ready answer. "It is the mirror of truth," said her visitor, "and gentleness. Excuse my trusting to it, and returning." His manner of saying these words divested them entirely of the character of compliments. It was so plain, grave, unaffected, and sincere, that she bent her head, as if at once to thank him, and acknowledge his sincerity. "The disparity between our ages," said the gentleman, "and the plainness of my purpose, empower me, I am glad to think, to speak my mind. That is my mind. And so you see me for the second time." "There is a kind of pride, sir," she returned, after a moment's silence, "or what may be supposed to be pride, which is mere duty. I hope I cherish no other." "For yourself," he said. "For myself. Apostrophe, but pardon me, apostrophe suggested the gentleman. For your brother John? Apostrophe, apostrophe, proud of his love, I am, apostrophe said Harriet, looking full upon her visitor, and changing her manner on the instant, not that it was less composed and quiet, but that there was a deep impassioned earnestness in it that made the very tremble in her voice a part of her firmness, and proud of him. Sir, you who strangely know the story of his life, and repeated it to me, when you were here last apostrophe, merely to make my way into your confidence, apostrophe interposed the gentleman. For heaven's sake, don't suppose apostrophe, I am sure, apostrophe she said, you revived it, in my hearing, with a kind and good purpose. I am quite sure of it. Apostrophe, I thank you, apostrophe returned her visitor, pressing her hand hastily. I am much obliged to you. You do me justice, I assure you. You were going to say, that I, who know the story of John Carker's life apostrophe, may think it pride in me, apostrophe she continued, when I say, that I am proud of him. I am. You know the time was, when I was not when I could not be but that is past. The humility of many years, the uncomplaining expiation, the true repentance, the terrible regret, the pain I know he has even in my affection, which he thinks, has cost me dear, though heaven knows I am happy, but for his sorrow I owe, sir, after what I have seen, let me conjure you, if you are in any place of power, and are ever wronged, never, for any wrong, inflict a punishment, that cannot be recalled. While there is a God above us to work changes in the hearts he made. Apostrophe, your brother is an altered man, apostrophe returned the gentleman, compassionately. I assure you I don't doubt it. Apostrophe, he was an altered man when he did wrong, apostrophe said Harriet. He is an altered man again, and is his true self now, believe me, sir. Apostrophe, but we go on, said her visitor, rubbing his forehead, in an absent manner, with his hand, and then drumming thoughtfully on the table, we go on in our clockwork routine, from day to day, and can't make out, or follow, these changes. They're a metaphysical sort of thing. We haven't leisure for it. We haven't courage. They're not taught at schools or colleges, and we don't know how to set about it. In short, we are so DD businesslike, apostrophe said the gentleman, walking to the window, and back, and sitting down again, in a state of extreme dissatisfaction and vexation. I am sure, apostrophe said the gentleman, rubbing his forehead again, and drumming on the table as before, I have good reason to believe, that a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.